I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. Thanks so much for listening in to us. Today's show is about food waste. I have Catherine Sizoff, who's the CEO of Strela, who are a biotech company that are engaged in some fascinating work that instruments the supply chain to cut the massive problem of food waste. And therein, there's an opportunity to help save the planet, increase profits, and for all of us who consume food to give us better food. I recommend you this interview because, A, Catherine is super smart and just very inspiring person to hear talk as an entrepreneur. She's working on a really important problem, she and her team. I think this is a really interesting case study for entrepreneurs because there's some really central technology, but you can see some of the challenges that await any of us that look to commercialize technology in terms of the ecosystem, the supply chain, the integrations that need to get done. And her firm has done an amazing job. They've got some really cool investors. And for that reason, I encourage you to listen to this conversation with Catherine.
The Mr. Beacon podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, intelligence for everyday things, powered by IoT Pixels.
Well, Catherine, welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am really looking forward to our chat. You've been doing some super interesting work on food and reducing food waste with your company, Strela. And first of all, congratulations on coming up with a great company name. I Googled it and found the company straight away. There were no collisions. It's novel, but I feel like I've been hearing the name of your company all my life. Where did you come up with, how did you come up with Strela?
Yeah, Strela is actually a Russian word or derived from the Russian word, strela. So if you look at a lot of the technological Russian innovations, they kind of have a similar nomenclature. So like, for example, the first dog that made it back from space in one piece was Strelka. And so I think there's a lot of really good luck associated with, in my head, with Russian words that are kind of a similar lilt. It means arrow in Russian, so it has a really straightforward connotation in my head, a little bit of that feminine sound in English. And so I think that kind of encapsulates a lot of a lot of the company itself. Yeah,
well, it seems to be, as a talisman or a good luck charm, it seems to be working for you. Or maybe you're just very talented, driven, and smart in terms of what you're doing. But you guys are doing really well. And maybe we should get to the point and I should allow you to share with us a bit about what Strela does.
Yeah, so at Strela, what we do is we build technologies that can predict how ripe produce is. So if you know what the actual shelf life of something that's perishable is, then you can do a better job organizing it within the supply chain. The ultimate goal is to reduce food waste and supply the customer, which is us, with a better tasting fruit or vegetable.
And how do you figure out whether something's ripe or not?
Yeah, we have a lot of, at this point, we're building out a couple of different technologies. So the core of it was a sensor that can basically intercept communications between fruits as they're ripening. So if you ever put an unripe banana next to a ripe one, you'll see that it ripens a lot faster than if it was by itself. And this is because fruits communicate with each other using gases. And what we've done is we've created a sensor that can intercept these communications and basically hear what the fruit is telling us in terms of its maturity. We're also now applying some more fancy stuff like machine learning models and just straight up math to interpret signals coming from fruits and vegetables, and then basically turn that into an approximation of what their shelf life is. So where along their maturity they're located. And then using that information, we can kind of triage, if you will, what's going on in the supply chain. So if you have an apple that's going to go bad sooner than another one, you can kind of prioritize it in the queue of the supply chain to get it to the consumer first.
You're just blowing my mind. I thought we kind of jokingly talk about what if your products could talk, and you're saying they actually, fruit is actually talking, and they're not talking to us, they're talking to each other. Is that like a figure of speech, or are they? Is there a, you know, a Darwinistic evolutionary advantage for one pair talking to another pair saying, "I'm ripening, buddy"?
Yeah, so we don't know the exact evolutionary mechanisms of what goes on, but we do suspect that all of the fruit on a tree ripening at the same time is beneficial to it. So for example, perhaps all of the apples falling from a tree at the same time make it more appealing to the deer to come and eat the seeds and then, you know, spread the spread them around geographically than if you just dropping one apple at a time. But for whatever reason, fruits and vegetables do communicate with each other, and they like to signal how ripe they are.
And so you're listening into that conversation, and what are the signs that you pick up that the ripening is happening?
Yeah, so the main thing that we look at is a gas called ethylene. And ethylene emissions vary based on where the fruit is in its ripening stage. And that's called a climacteric curve. So if you can basically map this curve of ethylene production very accurately, then you can tell where in the life cycle a fruit or vegetable is.
And that's pretty amazing. How did you figure this out?
I think, so my background is in molecular biology, actually. And I started reading about food supply chains, and the kind of the main thing that stood out was that where produce and a lot of perishables are biological organisms and they react as such. But the way that the food supply chain treats them is kind of like a static commodity object rather than a biological organism. And so I thought, what if we put on the lens of thinking about all of this produce as a biological organism and trying to understand how it was reacting to its environment based off of that kind of core intrinsic principle. And so that's kind of read a lot of papers, did a lot of market research, and then ended up on this particular solution.
And you decided to start a company to commercialize some of the solutions that you started designing. I'm sure as you looked around for funding, you had to answer the question, how big is the problem I'm solving? And how big is that problem?
I would say so 30% of the food waste is generated by 10 commodities that we're currently targeting. And if we can challenge a lot of the kind of core processes in the three major points of the supply chain, which are the supplier level, the retailer level, and the importer distributor level, then our market in the United States is about $6.8 billion annually.
And how much food waste is there generally?
The carbon emissions on food waste are greater than that of all U.S. transportation combined. It accounts for 7% of the global freshwater supply, 3% of all U.S. energy. So 40% of all food is wasted before it's consumed. There's a lot of really crazy stats, or horrible stats, honestly, around food waste. Another one is, if food waste was a country, it'd be the third largest GHG emitter after the United States and China. so massive problem, and it doesn't really benefit anybody. You know, if you think about transportation, you know, there's pros and cons to driving a car somewhere, but food waste mm-hmm. doesn't really help anybody at all. And so that's one of those problems that I think is why I'm really passionate about it, because ultimately it's kind of a net loss for everybody. And it also impacts P&Ls and our customers in a really negative way for profitability. And so if you can marry both sustainability with profitability, I think that's when you can really make a huge impact.
It seems amazing. So first of all, it's like enormously heartening that there's a big problem that seems like it might have some solutions that would be actionable, because everyone wins, you know, people, planet, profit. They're all going to benefit if we address this. Given that, you know, we're supposed to be this amazing capitalist country, why have we accepted the level of food waste that exists, do you think?
I don't think we have accepted it. I feel like that misconception happens a lot when people are like, well, you know, why don't farmers do better? And the reality is a farmer does everything they absolutely can, right? They've spent their blood, sweat, and tears growing a crop. And it is an incredibly difficult job, and they're not looking to waste that. And neither is anybody else along the supply chain, because again, it shrink equals losses to your bottom line, right? I think the problem is that right now, our supply chain is really segregated, and each person is kind of acting like an individual actor, if you will. And there needs to be a system-wide optimization in order for us to actually eliminate a lot of these issues.
And what does system-wide optimization look like?
Well, it kind of looks like what we're trying to do, which is to have a guardian, if you will, of produce as it plays this gigantic game of hot potato and passes from hand to hand to hand along the supply chain. And the way that that would look is collecting information, data, understanding what this produce item is doing, and then helping each person along the supply chain make the best decision for that produce item, so that by the time it gets to the consumer, it's as good as it possibly can be.
And how's that going?
You know, it's really hard for me to have any metrics of internal success, because I feel like I live under a rock. But I would say that we're working with a number of suppliers and retailers now to optimize their food supply chains. We've seen a huge amount of improvements. So at the retailer level, we see about a 50% reduction in store level food waste, which is huge. We see a 5x improvement in quality on the store shelf when we use our technology to make a smarter supply chain. And on the supplier side, we've been working for about 5 years with some of the largest apple and pear growers actually in the United States. And we've monitored over 2 billion pieces of fruit.
That's all incredibly impressive. How are things going at the corporate development level? You're CEO of a startup. Funding, who are your backers?
So we closed, we've raised about $11.5 million of institutional capital to date. Our last round was a Series A that we closed a couple months ago. Our investors included Yamaha, Google Ventures, Rich's Products Ventures, Millennium Tech Ventures, and a lot of other folks that, you know, had supported us through our seed round.
And when, let's talk a bit more about the focus. I think you mentioned that you can focus on a relatively small set of products and make a big difference. What are the products that you're focusing on?
Yeah, so the way that I would look at it is when you go to the grocery store, what irks you the most? So you've got your avocados, that's usually a big one, bananas, kiwis, apples, pears, mangoes. So all of those kind of higher margin items that really, you know, tend to be a little bit volatile are the ones that we're targeting. Tomatoes is another one.
What about strawberries and bananas?
Bananas
are low margin, aren't they?
Yes, but they're a very important driver because bananas are kind of the first thing that you pick up when you go to the produce section. And a lot of shoppers, when the bananas aren't good, tend to be discouraged shopping other produce. It's a huge driver of sales, even outside of the produce category itself. If you don't have good bananas, people aren't doing their, you know, weekly milk run, if you will, to your grocery store. So they're a very, very important commodity. Berries, I like to call them the weird aunt of the produce family, if you will. They operate an entirely different way. They don't emit ethylene. And so a lot of our kind of core technology doesn't apply to that, but our R&D team is busy building solutions for those guys as well.
And how big is your company?
About 18 full-time now.
Awesome. And tell us a bit about more about the way you implement your systems. How do you measure the ethylene? How does that get communicated to systems? How do the systems get used? And we should talk about who your customers are as well. But I've thrown enough at you to get your teeth into. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a sensor technology that measures the ethylene. And then we use an IoT network to essentially communicate all of that data and information wirelessly into the cloud. Then we go ahead and interpret and analyze that data. And then we either just output it onto like a standalone dashboard for some customers in a way that's actionable to them. Or we integrate directly into an existing process if it's a larger customer like a retailer. So one of the kind of core use cases is in apples. So an apple can be stored for up to a year by the time it gets to a grocery store. And it's not done in any super crazy way. It's just that if you take if you put a fruit in a deoxygenated cold environment, it can last for a year, at least an apple or a pear can. And so the thing is that a person who does this is called a packer. They put millions of apples in storage in dozens of storage rooms. And they typically use a combination of some historical data and limited sampling to determine which apples can make it that year and which ones will turn into applesauce, because not all apples can make it for that long. And the problem is that because you have such crazy seasonal variability, it's not always easy to predict what's going to happen. And so instead of relying on kind of limited data sets, what we do is we listen to the fruit talk. And then based on that, we can tell a packer, hey, this room is going to be fully mature and starting to kind of decrease in quality in the next 2 months. And so that room should be prioritized over other rooms that still might have that shelf life and could keep going.
So you're working at the room level in the case of apples. And so that's sounds like it would be a solution that's just used by growers, but it sounds, I'm thinking that you have other customers other than growers.
Yeah, so for apples, what we can then do is say, okay, well, we've sat with these apples for 6 to 8 months by the time they've reached a Kroger or an Albertsons. And so we can say, look, we have 6 to 8 months of maturity data. What if we take this a step further and help the retailer make a decision on what they're doing with that apple? So a retailer is not a supplier. They have very limited information. They're not experts in apples. They're managing hundreds of thousands of different SKUs of inventory. And so oftentimes a lot of the decisions they make are pretty rudimentary and not really based on the perishability of the product. And so what we do is we take that data that we've collected and we help the retailer also make sure that they're sending the right fruit at the right time to the right store.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I'm just trying to picture in my mind how this works, because it's that, you know, we're on a show about IoT, and sometimes the best ideas prove to be super difficult because of the structure of the ecosystem and the way it operates. Technically, you've got a solution, but can it actually fit the market? So I kind of get, if I'm an apple grower, and it sounds like that's where you started, I can sequence when I open up these big storage rooms. And if I'm at a Kroger, who is making the decisions about this? And I think part of what was really intriguing to me, which kind of resonates with my own experience where I work, is this idea of ripest first. And how do you change a supply chain that's just kind of been at best working with first in, first out? Often it isn't first in, first out, but how do you get the right information in front of the right people? It's not just send a report to some person in headquarters, is it?
No, so you're totally right. So the way that retailers currently operate is they'll go first in, first out. So the first truck of avocados into their distribution center is the one that gets sent to the grocery store first. What we do instead is when that truck gets accepted into that distribution center, we assign it a dynamic expiration date, if you will. And that way, all of their warehouse management software, everything that they use to basically organize inventory, now orders that produce based on expiration date instead of first in, first out. And that way you're sending the most mature produce to the grocery store shelf first. Depending on what the retailer gives us, we can take it a step further. So for example, if we knew the routes, if we know logistics routes, we can send fruit with shorter expiration dates to shorter hauls. We're also working on potentially integrating store level data. So for example, if you have, maybe a lower income neighborhood that is really price sensitive, then you can send certain produce there, save money on waste, et cetera, give it to a community that wants it and needs it, and then maybe reserve your higher margin crops and commodities for places that care about it. I mean, I've always wondered, who needs that perfect red apple, honestly? Yeah. You know, like, that's something that some people really need. Other people are very price sensitive. And so if we have that level of data store by store, then we can do a better job not only, you know, reducing food waste, but also addressing different types of consumer needs.
Yeah, I think American consumers are very used to kind of a perfect polished apple. And in other countries, then that's, you know, not the case. We're willing to accept ugly fruit because we think it's authentic and so forth. Are you operating, is that your experience? And are you operating mainly in the States?
Yeah, we mostly work in the United States, and our major crops are apples, pears, and bananas right now.
Very cool. So going back to the integration, because that's, again, what really is one of the things that really influenced me as a show that focuses on IoT entrepreneurs. It sounds like the warehouse management system, the WMS, is that the system that you, when you went beyond the grower, that was the integration point? How do you integrate with the WMS? What language is WMS's talk?
Oh my goodness, there's a whole lot of them. Most of them are very ancient languages. That's already, frankly speaking, not a good question for me to answer. I have a team of developers that are far more articulate in this particular area, but it's stuff like COBOL and Fortran and things like that. Fun stuff
that I learned when I was in college. So maybe there's a future for me in development. So you're actually writing API type integrations to these warehouse management systems, which may not be the newest warehouse management systems, but they're kind of well established. And then what are the other systems? So if you want to get, how far have you got in terms of freshest first, in terms of the actual retail stores? What are the systems you integrate that with there?
So currently the two major things that we do in retail is when supply is coming into the retailer, we ensure that that product has the appropriate shelf life to make it through the supply chain. So we'll do a map, for example, of a retailer and say, you know, the average time it takes for it to actually get to the store shelf and sold is 20 days. And then we work with the supplier to make sure that they're sending apples or whatever that can make it all the way to the store shelf without compromising quality. So that's the first step. And then the second step is organizing and prioritizing inventory within the retailer supply chain, mainly using dynamic expiration date in their warehouse management software.
And how far has the industry got to dynamic routing of deliveries? Because to me, this is one of the things we've got to move to if we're going to save the planet. We can't have massive trucks filled with, you know, 10 times as much of everything as is needed going to every location. We need small trucks with less stuff going to half the places, only going to where it needs to get to. And that's, you know, true whether you're doing real-time inventory or freshest first. Is anyone doing that, or are you having to wait for dynamic delivery to be implemented? Is that one of the things that holds back your expansion?
We try to look for ways to work around that and ways to kind of work within a very static supply chain, like you said, inflexible supply chain. The only one that I know that is capable of doing what you're talking about is Amazon's supply chain. But other than that, most traditional groceries absolutely do not have the capabilities. But we do different things. So like one problem that we face is that, let's say you have more ripe avocado and a less ripe avocado, and you want to basically organize them within a distribution center so that you have a stack of more ripe avocados and a stack of less ripe avocados. Well, right now, the only way to really do that is to create two separate SKUs for those avocados. So you have like one SKU of ripe avocado and one SKU of underripe avocado. And so that's how we work. It's not, depending on the retailer, it can be a pretty different implementation, and the decision-making points can be different. So another example of what we do with retailers is there are some retailers that send product overseas or even just to Puerto Rico or Hawaii. And so those hauls and transit times are significantly longer, and that's really easy to predict. And so what we do is we just make sure that any pallets of produce that are sent to those longer hauls have a longer shelf life. And we know if they're designated for a certain region or location. And so we can make that decision up front.
Very cool. What about partners? When I was reading about you a while back, I noticed you were featured on IBM's website. So congratulations on that. What can you say anything about? I assume you have a partnership with them, or do they just like what you're doing and decided to cover you?
I'm still a little befuddled as to our relationship with IBM, because we currently don't really work with IBM in any capacity. I think they were just pretty interested in our story and they wanted to feature us as new creators on their website, which is so awesome.
Yeah, that is great, and good on them for doing it. I mean, they've got this food trust thing. I was wondering whether you were integrating with blockchain systems and all that sort of fancy stuff.
Currently, we don't, but I would love to work with them in the future. I think so far we've been advertising, but not working together.
And what are the key dependencies on growth for you? Where do you want to take the company in the next couple of years?
So obviously moving across different commodities, so providing solutions for multiple different types of crops, and then figuring out what sorts of additional data we can use. So to your earlier point, what else can we do? Okay, let's say logistics and dynamic shipping isn't something that's readily available to us. There are other things that we can do. We can start integrating into demand planning. We're kind of more on the supply planning side, if you will. But what happens if we integrate market data and customer decisions and what's happening on the store shelf in terms of inventory into our decision making?
Can you say a bit more about that? So demand planning, who's the customer that would be using demand planning?
So both the retailer and the supplier typically use demand planning. It's just on the other side. So what we do is we deal with a variable supply, if you will. So we're helping a retailer and a supplier understand what their supply actually looks like. And then both the retailer and the supplier use demand planning to forecast how much they think they will need to sell or to buy. So if a retailer doesn't do demand planning correctly, then they'll have either overstocked shelves, which will mean more food waste, or understocked shelves, which means less sales. And so figuring out how much consumers want and being able to adequately supply that is super important. And so what could we do with that additional data set if we linked both the supply to demand planning?
Very cool. Well, this has been really interesting, Catherine. Is there anything I should have asked you to give listeners a better picture of what you're doing?
I think the easiest way to think about the supply chain is by who owns the product, because then it becomes pretty easy to see who cares about food waste and quality improvements. So once it's been handed off from the supplier, it gets to the retailer, and the retailer now owns the fruit. And so if anything happens to it, then they have an impact on their P&L. And so that's how we basically segment the supply chain, is who is currently the steward, if you will, of this produce item, and who is it going to hurt if you don't end up selling it or moving it along the chain. I think the last piece is also to the earlier point that food waste is not something that any individual company or institution can really address by themselves. It does kind of require a little bit of a concerted effort on behalf of the entire system in order to make an improvement, which is oftentimes very challenging when you have, you know, a buyer-supplier relationship or a chain that just typically doesn't communicate with one another. But it absolutely is where we need to be going in the future.
So it's funny, we have this tradition of asking our guests about the first three, their favorite three songs. And I try and give people warning, but for better or worse, sometimes the message doesn't get through. So I know you've had no time to think about this, but Catherine, what would you say your three favorite songs are, one at a time? And I like to ask people why, because otherwise it's like, doesn't really... I'm not doing this because I don't have enough things to listen to. It's an exercise to get to know you a little better.
Fair enough. I would say one of my favorite songs is "While My Guitar Gently Weeps" by the Beatles. I think one of the reasons why I like it is that the lyrics are something that I can return to at many different parts of my life, and I feel like they have relevance. I also, if you've ever seen Prince playing that song, it's incredible. It sent goosebumps shivers down my spine when I had first seen it. And I also just love songs that feature like some pretty strong guitar in them.
Do you play any musical instruments yourself?
Not really. I don't really have talent for it. I tried piano for a long time, but it's just not as talented as like my brother or other people. So, but I do enjoy strong guitar focused music. Another one kind of in that similar vein would be Mary Jane's Last Dance, Tom Petty's song, which I know is a classic for a lot of people, but I actually only heard of Tom Petty a couple years ago. I did not grow up with a lot of American music, actually, and I love it. I love that kind of classic rock sound.
And what sort of music did you grow up with?
I would say a lot of like Pink Floyd, kind of more experimental music.
Progressive rock. So English music or just...
Yeah, some English music, like you said, some kind of progressive acid rock. My dad was a big fan of like Madonna, and so I listened to a lot of what my dad liked, and he's a big audiophile. So I remember one of the most interesting moments of my life with my father was, you know, I asked him, why do you have these humongous speakers? He had like these floor to ceiling monoplanal speakers in our living room, and I'm like, these are huge and ugly, why do you have them? And he sat me down in the middle of our living room and played Time by Pink Floyd. And the sound of all of those clocks at the beginning was so, you could hear like every little tiny like tick of all these different clocks, and it was so unique. And then he proceeded to play an album of just sounds, like the sound of a train going by. And it was so transformative. So, big thanks to my father for introducing me to high quality music.
Excellent. Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm an audiophile, but I do like dabbling in that space. I've got a tube amp, you know, it's got these valves, so it looks very retro, and it takes about a minute to actually turn on, but... for some reason, it makes me enjoy listening to the music. I'm not sure I could tell the difference, but between that and a conventional amplifier. But anyway, okay. Well, that's super interesting. And number three, what's your third choice?
I would, just to be a little different, I would put, like from the other ones, I would put Right Here, Right Now by Fatboy Slim. I would say that's the most hype song for me. You know, I can get into... I can get into a mood with that song, whether it's working out or if I need to get some stuff done. If I listen to that song, I'm like totally motivated to keep going.
I love that song, and I love the album that it's off of. And I heard him being interviewed by, what's his name? Is the one of the founding members of the Sex Pistols, who now lives in LA. And he was talking to Fatboy Slim, and it was great to actually hear about his creative process, which apparently consists of taking a lot of drugs. And he's, I think, you know, success in rock music is either being able to resist taking a lot of drugs or being able to function highly whilst taking a lot of drugs. And in his case, it seems to be the latter. So
yes, it seems like you can get to enlightenment in a couple of different ways.
indeed. Well, that was wonderful. Thanks very much for sharing that, Catherine.
Yeah, of course.
Very good. Well, once again, thanks for talking with us. Super interesting. Congratulations on your success. I hope you continue in that direction. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly did. It was awesome. I love it when younger people appreciate older people's music. I also enjoy learning stuff, and there's a lot I learned from that. If you enjoy learning and you feel like it helps your entrepreneurial skills, your solution design skills, then please do continue to listen to our show, tell your friends about it, and tell the world about it via whatever podcasting social platforms you use. We really appreciate your listening. Most of all, that's the most important thing. Thank you for that, and we'll see you next time.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.